ஓம் நம சிவாய். டியர் லிசனர்ஸ் ஆஃப் சைவம் டாட் ஆர்க், தி நெக்ஸ்ட் ப்ரோக்ராம் இஸ் ஸ்பிரிச்சுவல் டிஸ்கோர்ஸ். இன் திஸ் யூ ஆர் அபவுட் டு லிசன் கவாய் ஹிந்து லெக்சர்ஸ். தி டைட்டில்ஸ் ஆர் தி யூனிவர்ஸ் ஆஃப் மைண்ட், தி கான்ஷியஸ் மைண்ட், பிரசன்டட் பை ஸ்ரீ சத்குரு சிவாய சுப்பிரமணிய சுவாமி. தேங்க்யூ. ஓம் நம சிவாய.
Merging with Shiva, Lesson 165, Intellect and Intuition. Mystics never demean or belittle intellectual reasoning. The intellect is not bad. It is good and necessary when used correctly. But they also do not evaluate it too highly. Knowing it is not the whole mind. It is only one phase of the mind. Instinctive, intellectual, intuitive phases define the whole of the mind. We often use the terms unfolding intuitive faculties and developing intuition. In an effort to encourage an individual on the path to work within himself in subduing his intellect so that he can actually observe the already functioning totality of his intuitive mind. In order to subdue the intellect, that partial conglomerate of thought patterns and modes of procedure, which accord with the culture of the day, it is first necessary to inwardly observe how one's acquired intellect actually functions. Observation is a faculty of the intuitive mind. And this particular aspect of observation only comes into usage after daily meditation has been maintained over a long period of time. Once an inkling of success in knowing intuition and how it differs from reasoning, emotional impulses, and pre-programmed patterns within the subconscious awakens, the contest is won. Then and then only can we sustain this knowledge and dive deeper into the inevitable, all the time losing the future and the past and loosening the reins of the intellect. Some men say they are part of God, that the God Spirit is within them. The intuitive mind we consider to be that part of God's vast mind, our inspiration. If you have ever had a hunch and had it work out, that is the intuitive mind working within you. It has temporarily dominated your conscious mind and made it possible for you to look into the future and estimate its happenings. The intuitive mind is the essence of time, yet it understands time and timelessness, its essence. It is the essence of space, yet it comprehends space and spacelessness. It is real, yet it does not exist. Real only when used, non-existent to the lower realms of the mind. Man's individual awareness is either captured by the nerve system of external consciousness of the animal bodies which his soul inhabits as vehicles to live in on earth, or captured by his celestial nerve system. This, then, is the intuitive nature, the natural expression of the transcendental soul known as man. Merging with Shiva, Lesson 166, The Five States of Mind. Observing the great vastness of the mind, we can draw another conclusion and say that there are five states of mind: conscious, subconscious, sub-subconscious, sub-superconscious, and superconscious. The first state is the conscious mind, in which we perform our daily routines. When awareness is in the conscious mind, we are externalized. This means we take our direction mainly from memory of past experiences, from other people, from newspapers, magazines, radio, television, or our emotions. The average man is aware in the conscious mind from the time he awakens in the morning until he falls asleep at night. That's what makes him average. Only when he becomes mystically inclined does he become consciously aware of some of the other four states. The second state is the subconscious mind, the grand storehouse and computer of man. It faithfully registers all thoughts and feelings that pass through the conscious state, whether correct or incorrect, whether positive or negative. It registers them and acts or reacts accordingly. The subconscious, the third state of mind, is a conglomeration of the various actions and reactions that we have experienced in daily life. It is a subtle state, composed of two or more vibrations of experience, which mingle and form a third vibration. We have an experience, we react to it. Later we have a similar experience, we react to that. These two reactions merge in the subconscious, causing a hybrid reaction that lives with us many, many years. The fourth state is the superconscious mind, deep, refined, and powerful. It filters intuitive flashes from the superconscious mind through the subconscious gridwork. There are times when you want very much to find a clear answer from within yourself. However, being aware in the conscious mind predominantly, awareness is cut off from direct contact with the superconscious. So you begin to ask questions of yourself. These questions are registered in the subconscious. The subconscious, like a well-programmed computer, begins to search for the right answer from the superconscious mind. Then, all of a sudden, you know the answer from the inside out. The superconscious is the fifth state of the mind. Within it is one world within another world, and yet another. All mystical phenomena and deep religious experiences come from the superconscious. It is the mind of light, beautiful and vast. When one is superconsciously alive, he feels joyously alive throughout the totality of his being, physically, emotionally, and mentally. For new energies are working through his nerve system. This state of the mind is available to everyone to be aware in. The superconscious is the mind of bliss. It is vast, pure intelligence. The subsuperconscious mind is that aspect of the superconscious functioning through established subconscious patterns. As we learn to identify these states one from another, we also become more sensitive, like the artist who learns to observe depth, color, and dimension within a beautiful painting. His sense of enjoyment is far superior to that of the average man who simply sees the paintings as a nice picture. Having no appreciation of the intricacies of color, depth, movement, and technique. Merging with Shiva, lesson 167, unfolding the superconscious. The average man may have occasional sub-superconscious experiences and rare superconscious intuitive flashes. His awareness, however, is not attuned to know the intricacies of the workings of his own mind. Therefore, he is not able to identify one from the other, making his sense of enjoyment less than that of the mature mystic. Because he is unaware of the higher states of mind, the average man may harbor his awareness deep in the subconscious states of suffering over the past for long periods of time, thereby completely ignoring his superconscious intuitive flashes when they come. As a result, his ability to bring awareness inward out of the external conscious and subconscious states of mind and into more blissful and refined areas is lessened. Now sadhana is necessary for him to unfold his inner depths. Although he is unaware of these superconscious happenings within himself and unable to astutely pinpoint and dramatically distinguish them from his turbulent subconscious, his superconscious breakthroughs do have an effect upon the totality of his being. But when man lives externalized in the conscious and subconscious states, all the inner enjoyment and conscious abilities of exercising perceptive faculties are completely lost. The ritual of daily sadhana must be performed to quell the ordinary mind's tumultuous turbulence. There are many mystics in the world today who have had no formal training and seem to unfold inwardly very rapidly simply by learning about the five states of mind, how to distinguish one from another, and how to move awareness within them consciously and systematically. They are participating in and enjoying some of the benefits of being able to experience step by step direct cognition of the five states of mind: conscious mind, subconscious mind, sub of the subconscious mind, sub-superconscious mind, and superconscious mind. There is but one mind, and in its functioning it works the same in everyone as an autonomous, interrelated, self-perpetuating mechanism. Concentrate upon that mind. Find out what the mind is. Observe your thoughts, feelings, and actions from within, and know that your mind is yours to use to the extent that you control the mind with the will. Why must you study the mind? Because understanding alone is 50% of the control of the mind. This understanding is necessary to impress the subconscious deeply enough to secure awareness so that spiritual strength continues to come from within, from the superconscious through the subconscious. Before we can meditate, we have to know our way around within the mind. What part of you understands how the mind works? It is your superconscious. The subconscious can't understand how the mind works because it's the repository. The sub-subconscious can't understand. It is a collective repository. Your conscious mind can't understand either, for it is opinionated knowledge looking at the world through the eyes of others. Only the superconscious and sub-superconscious can conceive how the mind works. Merging with Shiva, lesson 168. Understanding is control. When a situation comes up, I observe how the conscious mind looks at it. Then I ask how my subconscious would see it. Pondering further, I inquire how my sub-superconscious relates to it. Then, how my superconscious views it. Through this process, I get a clear picture of what happened, how it happened, and if I should take it seriously. You might react strongly to a happening, but when you look closely, you see it wasn't much to be concerned about. It is just the subconscious reacting, so you forget it. The subconscious was the problem. It is your sub-superconscious intuitive understanding that makes such judgments. Remember, these are not five separate departments. They all interrelate. The conscious and subconscious work together. The sub-subconscious seems to work independently of both the conscious and the subconscious, but it's not really independent. It's just another aspect of the subconscious. The superconscious is our vast, pure intelligence. The sub-superconscious is one aspect of the superconscious, functioning through the subconscious patterns. As we begin working with ourselves, we remold the patterns that set the course of our life. We remold our subconscious mind. We begin to identify with infinite intelligence, not with the body, or the emotions, or the intellect. As we prepare for the realization of the self in this life, we set new energies into action within our body. We begin to flow our awareness out of the past and into the present, right into the now. This steadies emotion. Then we cease to have concepts that the physical body or the emotional body is I. We begin to claim spiritual independence. and are able to watch the mind think. By remolding old habit patterns in the subconscious mind, we cultivate a contemplative nature and become nonviolent in thought and action, having that innate understanding of the karmic cycles of the workings of the various states of mind. We are able to love our fellow man. It is easy to keep promises and confidences, for we have a certain restraint. We can begin to direct desires and acquire a certain inner poise, which we did not have before, and we continually find new understanding through meditation. In order to meditate, it is not enough to memorize the five states of mind, conscious mind, subconscious mind, some of the subconscious mind, sub-superconscious mind, and superconscious mind. It is not enough to memorize the processes of unwinding awareness and reprogramming the subconscious through affirmation, attention, concentration, and observation. We must study out and apply these teachings to ourselves. We must master them. This is the way we become a different person than we are today. When we simply memorize, we are only putting another intellectual covering over the beauty of our soul. Surround yourself with superconscious people, people who are on the path. Being in their presence will help you, and their being in your presence will help them. The group helps the individual, and the individual helps the group. This is provided the group is of one mind, both inner and outer. Place yourself in a good environment, a physically clean house, clean clothing, clean body, and among people who are shining forth from within. Do not surround yourself with people who are bound in the conscious mind, engrossed in jealousy, hate, fear, and the other instinctive intellectual qualities that cause contention in and among them. This will disturb you and hinder your progress on the spiritual path. If you are going to sit for meditation, you must follow these inner laws. Do not argue with anyone anymore. A mystic never argues. Argument pulls awareness into the conscious mind and programs the subconscious in a strange way. It becomes mixed up. Then it has to be unscrambled. Also, never try to convince anyone of anything. If you are talking to a mystic, he will understand what you are going to say as you speak it. Usually before you have spoken, he will have grasped the point of it. He's that sharp, he's that keen. If you are talking to someone who lives deep in the intellect of the conscious mind, he will want to discuss endlessly. He will want to argue subtle points, and the issue will never be fully settled, especially if you disagree with him. The mystic sits in meditation and asks himself, "Who am I? Where did I come from? Where am I going?" He has the sensitivity to take a little flower and study it and conquer the functions of distraction as he works to hold his awareness at attention. Like a well-disciplined soldier, the within, with a will supreme in governing that attention. This caliber of mystic will in this way learn to concentrate inwardly as his supreme will dominates his powers of awareness, bringing forth the body of the soul into the physical elements, so its keen inner observation is unfolded. Merging with Shiva, Lesson 170, The Donkey and the Carrot. When we are in the conscious mind, we are like a donkey with a carrot in front of our nose. We are always walking, trying to get that carrot. We are never satisfied, and we are never happy. The grass is always greener on the other side of the fence. No matter how much money we have, we want more. No matter how many clothes we have, we need more. No matter how many television programs we watch, there is always the better one coming up. No matter how many sights we have seen, the next one may surpass them all. No matter how much food we eat, there is always the next big, wonderful meal to enjoy. No matter how many emotions we experience, the next set of those emotional experiences will be the high point of our entire life, and we are sure of it. That is the conscious mind. When we live in the conscious mind, we only surmise. We make guesses. We are never quite sure if we are right. Therefore, we are insecure, because the conscious mind only knows what has gone before it. It is certain only about the past. If it has been provided with a good memory, then it knows the past very well. But without a good memory, the conscious mind doesn't know the past well at all. So, when we are in the conscious mind, we have one predominant and solid quality that we really can be sure of, and that is fear. We are afraid. We are afraid of the future, and many of the things of the past petrify us, for we don't want them to happen to us again. We don't know quite how to avoid them, because with awareness caught in conscious mind concerns, our superconscious faculties are temporarily cut off. The superconscious mind is seen as a figment of imagination, a product of superstition. The conscious mind is the real enemy, the real barrier, the real distractor to someone on the path of enlightenment. It is intriguing. It is the temptress. It leads us on and on and on, life after life after life after life after life after life after life. It is a wonderful state of mind, however, as long as our superconscious faculties are also available for awareness to flow into once in a while, to become refreshed and renewed by a change of perspective and influx of energy. Otherwise, the conscious mind is a difficult and onerous state of mind in which to live day after day after day. The spiritual path leads us out of the morass of the darkness of the conscious mind into the mind of light, which we call superconsciousness. Merging with Shiva, lesson 171, Reason Reigns Supreme. It really hardens a person to live in the conscious mind all the time, because he has to build an ego shell around himself for protection. That makes him insensitive and rough. One of the biggest protective influences of the conscious mind is anger. Anger makes a person cunning in his thinking, and of course the predominant underlying quality of anger is fear. He's always afraid of something. It is generally something that may happen or is going to happen. He's always in conflict with someone. These are the motivating forces of the conscious mind: anger and fear. Most people live in the conscious mind unconsciously. The conscious mind is the area of the mind where memory and time are gods, and reason is the supreme ruler. If it's not reasonable, it is not acceptable, declares the conscious mind, and if we can't measure it, it does not exist. That is the conscious mind. It is active. It is alive. The conscious mind perpetuates itself, and we all help it to do that. It is carried on in ramification by its own novelty. We can always find in the conscious mind some distractions to please us, to intrigue us, to dominate our awareness of other states of consciousness. and we don't have to look very hard to find it. The mystic's goal is to control awareness while he is in the conscious mind, to know where he is in consciousness. When he finds he is aware in the conscious mind, and the five senses have become his ruler, then he controls his awareness within the conscious mind itself. He does this in a number of ways. One way is through the control of breath. Breath is life, and life is breath. Breath is the controlling factor of awareness. Awareness rides on breath. Breath is also a controlling factor of our willpower. A seeker must develop a dynamic will to walk the path of enlightenment so that he does not stumble or falter, but continues onward no matter how difficult the path seems to be for him. The mystic loves the conscious mind, for he sees it like an adult sees the toys of children. An adult does not take children's toys too seriously, but the child does. Meditate on that comparison. Meditate also upon the conscious mind while you are aware in it. Write down on a piece of paper the various areas of daily experience over a period of 3 days to which you are most attached. Then meditate on those time periods until you are able to see the chemistry that makes the conscious mind appear to be what it is. When you live two-thirds within yourself, even physical things begin to look transparent to you.